Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, it is the Boomer and the Babe Show. It's on Monday. It is Monday, February 6th, 2012, and we're broadcasting as the suspiciously familiar announcer voice said, from the Feeding Arizona complex, Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. If anybody is within the sound of the voice and would care to make a donation to the Valley View Food Bank, it is very well appreciated, very much appreciated, and will be put to good use. As I said, the food is always free. You can contact them through their website, which is valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. That's valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. And I'm Pete Peters. Deborah Brown is, as we say, on assignment. I don't know what on assignment really means, but all I know is she's not here doing this with me today. She's got some other things, some other irons in the fire that she takes care of for our Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in much more than doing this radio show. We also have ebook authors and mini book authors. All of our ebook authors have the opportunity to host their own show on the Boomer and the Babe Network. In addition, we invite you to listen to them, and we produce videos and promotional products and consult for small businesses. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company. You can contact us via our website at boomerandthebabe.com. Also take a look and subscribe to our latest addition to our Boomer and the Babe family, which is Boomer Experience Speaks. It's an online magazine, and some of the guests that have been on the show also have written articles in that publication for us. Well, today we have a very, very interesting guest. I've been noticing his curriculum vitae that he sent along, wide-ranging in areas of expertise. His name is Dr. Murray Grossen. Dr. Grossen is out of California, and we have him on the line now, and we're going to ask him a few questions about what's going on with brains and ear, nose, and throat, because those are his specialties. Dr. Grossen, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Oh, good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you here. Just by way of a couple of preliminary questions, when you were a youngster, before you became a medical person, what was it that prompted you and directed you towards medicine?
Well, I guess I got interested in reading Freud. They tell me that I read the most of Freud's works when I was 12 years old, and I was interested in how the body works. In other words, why does the pupil constrict with light? Why is it you can't see after you step into the sunlight and things like that? So it was really interest in why things work in the body that got me into this. On the other hand, my son is quite the reverse. He's interested in why planets form and what are dark holes. So he's out there, you know, doing astrophysics, where I'm doing medicine.
So you are in inner space and he is in outer space.
Exactly correct.
Now, you also have a clinic that you're associated with. You've actually put it together, I understand.
Well, you said, yes, we are a five-person group at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, and our specialty is of sinus and snoring procedures. And we're kind of proud of the fact that when people come to us with, say, the sinus problem, we do everything possible to get them well without drugs, without surgery, and so on. Now, some of them you can't. You know, sometimes the sinus is so advanced that even my treatment using my gadget, the HydroPulse, won't clear them completely. But we are kind of proud that I mean, somebody comes to us and Jimmy needs his tonsils out. We have, you know, we clear the tonsils, we cure the tonsil, and then Jimmy doesn't have to have surgery. So that's sort of what our specialty is. On the other hand, we do teach the latest surgical techniques. One of our associates just came back from Indonesia, where he lectured on the new types of sinus surgeries.
So, but first and foremost, it sounds to me as though you are a non-invasive specialist. In other words, you prefer the non-invasive method.
Well, yes. In other words, you see, when we do these scientific studies, for example, on sinus, we find that after 6 days, the people who got the latest, jazziest, most expensive antibiotics are exactly the same as those who got the placebo. Now, why did the placebo work? And that, I think, is what's very, really important these days. As I mentioned in my book, Stress, Anxiety, Your Cure is in the Mirror, you can learn medication enhancement. You can learn to make your drugs work much better for you. On the other hand, this is not a matter of willpower. This is a matter of things that work. For example, my gadget, the HydroPulse, it pulses the nasal cilia, little hairs in your nose that move the bacteria out of your nose. So most people with bad sinus have slow cilia. What happens when you get stuck in traffic behind the diesel bus, those fumes will knock out your cilia, and then your nose feels kind of dry, and then you come down with a cold or whatever. So if you get those cilia back moving, that is the cure and prevents, you know, further problems.
Well, let me ask you a question. This is just kind of a stream of consciousness question here. When people have a cold, they come down with a cold, they've got a cough, they've got the typical upper respiratory congestion and so on and so forth. It's really, maybe it is, it's my guess that I've heard that it's really not because you didn't wear a hat, and it's not really because you walked around with bare feet. It's other things that have caused that. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes and no. You see,
okay.
You can get chilled, and when you get chilled, your nasal cilia slow down. And when your nasal cilia slow down, then you bacteria, you know, get married and have families in your nose. So that part is something. Also, when you're fatigued, you're more subject to cold. By the way, what's the best way of preventing a cold?
Stay warm and dry?
No. Smile. No, really? No, they did a study. They had this group deliberately smile, and all went along. And that group had much, much fewer colds than the group, the so-called normal group. Smiling will actually invigorate your immune system. What's happening is that, you know, when you go to these very, very expensive stores and the salespeople are all smiling and how do you do, so nice to see you, and so on and so forth, and, you know, they're very, very kind and generous and so on and so forth, and they're smiling. But what happens is that when they introduce that smiling situation in those very expensive stores, the sales go up, but also the absenteeism and the illness goes way down. So smiling does bring out your immune system. As a matter of fact, there was a very famous author, Norman Cousins, who was in the hospital at UCLA, and they could not get him well. So his friends brought in comedy movies in those days and had him watch, in those days, Laurel and Hardy and so on and so forth, movies. He started smiling, he started laughing, and guess what? He got well. And he wrote a book about this called Anatomy of an Illness.
I'll be darned. Well,
now, at our hospital, Cedars-Sinai, we have two channels with nothing but comedies.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, that's very interesting. Very interesting.
It is. Well, it's true.
So I guess there might be something to the song, Let a Smile Be Your Umbrella.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, we can take a great actor, and one week he's playing sad, 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 and we can sample his blood. And next week he's playing happy, 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 and sample his blood. And we can see the difference.
Well, I do. Here's what I do believe, and this may or may not fit in, but we have occasion where we have our office in our home. Now, we've got this office here with our little studio, and we have an office in our home. And when we have our office in our home, there's always something going on in the background on TV, something innocuous like political stuff. And I eventually I'll say to Deborah, I said, turn that stuff off. It's just absolutely droning on, and it's boring, and it's just depressing. And I think you can. I agree with you. I think you can indeed change your mood, change your whole outlook on life, just by the way you walk around through life and what you let yourself get involved in.
Well, there's a Professor Diener at St. Louis University has just completed a study. He can predict the longevity of a person by their happiness quotient. In other words, they fill out a form, you know, when do you smile, when do you laugh, and so on and so forth. And the ones who are, you know, happy people, they're going to live much longer than the person who's, you know, grumpy and sad and bewildered. And in his report, he can predict the longevity of a patient much better than any doctor, x-ray, physical finding, blood test, and so on. And it's completely independent of the cholesterol and blood pressure.
Well, I can't help but agree with that. I mean, it just seems to me that if you have a good positive mental outlook and you always find the good side of something and you go through life like that, some people might think that you're being naive or foolish or whatever, but the fact is you're certainly much more relaxed and you're not in the doldrums and you're not moping around and you're not depressed and you're not grinding. I mean, your mind is not just grinding on the problems that you're encountering.
Well, again, when you are smiling and, you know, feeling humorous, we can measure that your brain is working at a different level than when you're sad and depressed. So, now, in my book, we talk about stress, anxiety, the cure is in the mirror. It's not everybody can suddenly become humorous. It takes work. And I have about, I think, 30 pages devoted to how to do this. It's not, in other words, people just don't suddenly become, you know, happy and gay.
You can't flip a switch there.
No, I'm afraid not. It's really, you know, changing your personality and so on and so forth is really very much like learning a tennis serve. You got to practice. It's good to have a coach and things like that.
Kind of like I would guess maybe a lifestyle change, having to similar, not unlike eating differently, exercising more or less. I mean, I think they're somewhat all and possibly interactive. Is that conceivable?
Yes. Well, you know, there's a reason why there's 101 books on how to start doing exercise. There's a reason why there's 101 books on how to get rid of stress. Unfortunately, none of them give the basic. You know, they all make it sound like willpower, but really it's just like learning how to hit a basket with the ball or how to hit the ball with the bat. You really got to get out there and practice, and if you can have a coach, that really makes a big difference. That's why in my book, I have the mirror as your coach. And by the way, yesterday I did something very cruel and nasty and mean. I took my wife to Neiman Marcus and took her up to the second floor where they have nothing but mirrors all around. And I forced her to watch her posture in the mirror because she's getting in the habit of, you know, stooping a little bit. And finally she couldn't stand it anymore. She made me leave the store.
I was going to say.
But I believe in mirrors. A lot of people have problems with their jaw, with what we call TMJ problems. These people come to me because they say, my ear hurts. Well, I look in the ear, ear is fine, but when I feel the jaw and they open and close their mouth, it's very painful. So they have a choice. They can go to the dentist and get one of these night guards and so on and so forth, spend about $5,000, or they can get a mirror and draw a vertical line and practice relaxing the jaw so it opens in the midline. And that happens to work.
I thought you were going to tell me that you took your wife to the store, took her up there and had her look in the mirror, and then by the time you got home, there was a summons for divorce or something.
No, not quite that. She knows me by now. So she knows I'm really, my mind, my mind is in the good, my heart is in the right place. I really want to help her. But I thought, we have special mirrors for her also in the house, but you can't get away from the mirror when you're at Neiman Marcus.
That's true. Well, one of the things that piqued my curiosity, I don't know that people fully understand how we get guests for our shows, all of us that are in this business. There's any number of places you can go and you can put in a request for people of varying expertise. And I did just that, and you responded, were nice enough to respond to one of them. And the response that you gave was something that would pique any Arizonan's ear, because the magical name of Gabrielle Giffords was mentioned in the response. And it was about your introduction with regard to the brain enlarging and shrinking, and certain parts of the brain can be awakened and assume a new function and so on. And that's when you referred to former Senator now Gabrielle Giffords, or Representative Gabrielle Giffords. Let's kind of talk about that a little bit, and how the brain can, the path and the nerve path, if I'm saying it correctly, can change and find a different route and circumvent injury and so on and so forth. How does that all happen?
Well, this has been going on for many years. Many people have had the misfortune of having a stroke, and they lost the speech area of the brain. See, your brain is divided into different sections, and there's one section that has to do with the speech, another section has to do with vision, and another section with hearing. So if you lose a part of the brain for speech, a good speech therapist can get in there and gradually teach the brain to speak again. And what happens is that a new part of the brain that was not being used for speech before starts to become active. See, we can do what's called a PET scan. That's positron emission technology. And we can actually see which part of the brain is being used. Now, I'm sure, I don't know the details of Giffords exactly, but I assume that they did a PET scan on her, and the speech part of the brain, of course, had been damaged. But today, if you do a PET scan on her, you will find a certain part of the brain is actively generating and using glycogen, which is the food for the brain. And when she speaks, that part of the brain, the new part of the brain, is what lights up. Now, this can happen to any person. As a matter of fact, one of the things that's very interesting is that they did a study on people who have had a stroke, and of course they lost speech, and they may have lost walking also. And what they found was that the people who got the speech therapy got their walking back much better than the people who just specialized on walking, the rehab. So again, the more you do for the brain, the better.
So then it would be the case that they were trying to find new pathways or new work zones, if you will.
Exactly.
Simultaneously for speech and walking.
Well, yes. In other words, with Giffords, if you remember some of the things they showed on TV, they kept getting her to sing. They kept getting her to try to pronounce words. And the more that she tried to pronounce words, the more the brain generated these new circuits. And so it was the repetition that did it. And the repetition is so, so important. In other words, if you're going to stop smoking, you've got to go through this, you know, habit of not taking a cigarette in your hand and not buying cigarettes. Every single day you've got to visualize using all your senses, not going for the cigarette. And reading a book about how to quit smoking is totally useless. What's useful is the exercise, daily exercise of repetition.
And you have to think of it. I mean,
yes.
You have to think, I will not smoke. I can't smoke today. Whatever your cues are, you have to actively think about it. Otherwise, the habit will take over again.
Well, yes. Well, you know, in my book, I try to make everything on automatic. For example, on the visualization, I use a color scheme. In other words, a certain color will trigger you to relax. And so it's completely on autopilot. You don't have to think about it anymore once you practice. But it takes the practice.
All right. Let's go through that for a minute, if you don't mind.
Sure.
If I wanted to eat less, I don't know if the thought of eating less is the thought that I should have in practice, or is it that I should eat correctly? But whatever that is, first of all, tell me what I should do as far as being able to control my eating habits.
The first thing you have to do is get rid of stress. You see, most people eat because of stress. They feel tired, so they eat, or they feel there's a bad situation, and so they eat. Any woman will tell you that when she broke up with a boyfriend, she gained weight. Getting rid of stress, again, there's 101 books out there, and with my book, you have these exercises that you do every single day, and you have a coach to show you that you're doing it right, which is the mirror. So every day you practice breathing in, count to four, out, count to six. Every day you practice looking in the mirror and see your face, your jaw relax. Every day you recall when you had a good time at the beach or a good time at the birthday party. All these things build up a new circuits, and so you have less stress chemicals. So with less stress chemicals, you're able to appreciate that you don't have to stuff your stomach and so on and so forth. You don't have to eat a full bag of potato chips before you go to sleep. And it's only when you get rid of the stress situation that you can visualize not eating a bag of potato chips when you watch a ball game. Now, the other thing, of course, is visualization. Now, you can visualize not eating the candy bar, the donuts at 10 o'clock, but you've got to use all of your senses. You've got to use sight, sound, smell, taste, feel, and so on. Otherwise, it doesn't register in your brain. So it's not a matter of willpower. It's a matter of doing it correctly.
So there are techniques and exercises, if you will, to accomplish your task.
Exactly. Now, unfortunately, even though I have about 40 pages on how to quit smoking, that's not an easy one. There's so much social habits that are associated with it that with cigarette smoke, you really need, you know, all the help you can get. And joining one of those smoke clinics and so on and so forth is a good idea.
What is it? The fella said, yeah, he says, I quit smoking. I've quit smoking six times.
Well, you see, unfortunately, with smoking, you build up a new receptor. In other words, people start smoking at 15. By the time they're 30, they have 100 times more receptors for that enjoy the smoking than the person who doesn't smoke. On the other hand, when you're turned down for insurance, that's a bit of a bolt that gets you to quit in many cases. Although, as a doctor, I've been in the hospital where people who lost their limbs because they were smoking continued to smoke.
Well, I have seen myself and heard stories of people that have been in for cancers and whatever else, and they still continue to smoke. It's just amazing to me. I used to be a smoker myself years ago, and I remember my process was I used to play an awful lot of softball and golf and a lot of other things along the way. And one of the things that I did, I made a concerted effort not to smoke, but I didn't stop drinking the beer along in the process, because then after the ball game, we'd all go down to the local emporium and have a few, and of course we'd all light up. So I might be trying to quit smoking, but the smoking and the drinking of the beer in the bar was all part and parcel of the same process. Until I started slowing down on the beer, I was going to continue to smoke, and then finally it got to the point where I had thought I was done smoking. And I said to a friend of mine, as we were after the game, I said, "Look, give me one of your cigarettes if you don't mind." He says, "Ah, sure, go ahead." I took one drag off of it, and it tasted like dreck. And I threw it down on the concrete. He got mad at me because I ruined a perfectly good cigarette. But at that point, the taste was gone. It was not there anymore.
Well, I don't know what it is, but all these movies that take place in the 50s that they're showing these days, the guys never stop smoking. I mean, it's like... One of my patients had a role in a play, and he had quit smoking. And in the role, it demands that he smoke a cigarette, and he was having an awful time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I must admit, haven't smoked now for probably 12, 15 years. But I could be on the golf course, and if I can smell a cigarette off in the distance, somebody smoking it, right? Especially if I get the whiff of a good cigar. Oh, my goodness, I'd like to have on that. I'd like to be chewing on that cigar. But it's much easier now after all this time to just forget it. That was nice. I enjoyed that whiff, and I'm done, and move on. It's amazing how your brain and your mind can affect that change.
Oh, yes. Well, again, in my book, what I'm trying to do is teach people how to use the mind to... for better health. And in the section on medication enhancement, we can really learn to use our mind for our health, and it can make a huge, huge difference. In other words, what do you think my treatment for a common cold is? It's tea, lemon, and honey. And, well, scientifically, we know that tea stimulates the nasal cilia, but also the tea reminds people of, mothers giving them good treatment and so on, and that memory can also aid in stimulating your good immunity. But 99% of my patients, when they catch cold, they just... take the hot tea, lemon, and honey, and it works.
It's interesting you say that. In the nationality that I am, they have that same, very similar drink, tea, lemon, and honey, and they heat it up as hot as you could possibly take it, and they add one more ingredient. It's called bourbon. And you lay in your bed, and you inhale those vapors as you drink it. And before you know it, you're totally relaxed, you're nice and cozy warm, and you drift off to sleep.
Well, you see...
That is what's called a hot bunna.
Well, but you see, there's a scientific reason why that works. When you are in anxiety, your immune system is lousy. the bourbon relaxes you. Now you're relaxed. And also you fall asleep. Now, again, good sleep is the number one best immune factor. So there's a real scientific reason why that works. Look, I had this patient that was being treated for a bad sinus for about 6 weeks. And he called me up and, you know, made an appointment to come in the following week. I had not been treating him. Well, before he came in, his wife insisted that he go to this wonderful foot massage. Now, what's a foot massage got to do with treating sinus? Well, his wife insisted. He went to the foot massage. It relaxed him. And with the relaxation, his immune system kicked in and his sinus cleared up. He canceled my appointment, by the way. Well, I had the same thing happened. This gal called me up. She'd been coughing nonstop. She'd been to all the doctors, and I told her to come in, you know, next Tuesday. Well, she called me on Monday to cancel. What had happened is that her grandmother visited her, made her the old chicken soup she used to give her as a child. The chicken soup relaxed her and, of course, stimulated her bronchial cilia, and her cough cleared up.
Is it my imagination, or is it actually becoming the more and more the case now where the medical profession is looking to many other aspects of possible remedy rather than just taking out a pill bottle and using some of these older, what may have been considered to be old wives' tales at one point, maybe even Oriental medicine, acupressure, acupuncture, reflexology, any number of those types of things. Are they becoming more ingrained in the mainstream, what I'm going to suggest for the purpose of this conversation, mainstream medicine?
It's hard for me to say because I'm in sort of a you know, my own, you know, world, shall we say. And in my world, things have to have, you know, validity and scientific value. So in my world, if something works, we want to know why it works. Because in the years ago, we used to do something called a sham operation where you pretended to operate on the person to see if that new operation that this guy was promoting was really worthwhile. And then the patients would get well with the sham operation. So we knew that the new operation didn't have much value to it. But in my world, again, we measure the cholesterol and so on and so forth. I think you have to be careful about things that are not proven. In other words, she got well when she bought the four-leaf clover. Yeah, it did relax her, and it did give her a feeling of I'm going to get over this and so on and so forth. But the four-leaf clover does not actually affect the mechanism or the metabolism. I'm not sure I'm saying this right, but it's different. You have to be careful about well, there's an article I wrote called Death by Internet. And what this is that people will be told something by the doctor, then they'll run out to the Internet and spend weeks and weeks researching and so on and so forth. And by the time they decide, yeah, the doctor's right, and they'll go back to take the medication or whatever, it may be too late. The problem has already advanced too far. Or there's a case where this internet genius who, you know, practically founded the internet was told, looked up some symptoms that he had and decided he had a brain tumor. So he settled his affairs and told everybody, you know, bad things people that he hadn't liked and so on and so forth. And finally, his friend insisted he go to a doctor, and it turned out that his headaches were just from a neck sprain and not from a tumor. So he hurt himself because he had made the diagnosis strictly by the internet. So you have to be, you know, very careful about these things that are not valid, shall we say.
Well, I know for a fact that I mean, I had a doctor tell me some, give me a little bit of information that just enough to make me dangerous to myself. And I did the same, and I did the same thing. I went to the internet, and by the time I got off the internet, I was shaking in my shoes because I knew I must only have 24, 48 hours on the outside that I was going to live. And
well, unfortunately,
and that was a long time ago. So
yeah, well, unfortunately, there's so much misinformation on the internet too, and one really has to be very, very careful about you know, what they take in. You know, these advertisements, you know, money-back guarantee will cure whatever, and people send for it, and now they're ashamed to tell their family that they wasted their money, so they claim that the things help them. But again, one has to be very, very careful.
Well, the other side of that coin is that they are taking the medication, and they don't have to worry about the money-back guarantee because the medication is what helped in their demise, so they don't have to worry about paying the guy.
Ooh, that's mean.
Well, I'm smiling when I said it, Doctor. let me ask you this. You mentioned your book about the mirror, the cures in the mirror. Give me a little more, give us a little bit, our listeners, a little bit more information about what that process is and how that works.
Well, again, if you want to make a change, the first thing you have to do is get rid of the stress hormones, the stress chemicals. And the way that, you see, when you're in stress, you breathe faster. So if you breathe slow, breathe in, count four, breathe out, count six, make your exhale longer than your inhale, that sends a message to your stress center that there ain't no stress, ain't no tiger, and so the stress center will stop putting out those stress hormones. When you're in stress, you tighten your muscles, your jaw tightens. So if you go to the mirror, see your face, your jaw, your shoulders relax, that sends a message that there ain't no tiger, so the stress chemicals stop. If you, when you are in stress, you think the worst possible things can happen to you. So if you visualize the good things that happened to you in the past, that again replicates the previous good chemistry. You see, one of the things I have in my book is called time travel. You go back to that happy birthday party, and that happy vacation, and so on and so forth. And your body replicates those same chemicals, which is good for you, which may be therapeutic for what your current condition is. One of the things that we have to understand, too, is that we used to have these, what I call, temples of healing. People came there tired, exhausted, worried, and they went into this temple, and they were put to bed. They were given, you know, fresh fruits. Maybe they had music. People prayed over them. They got well. Now, you can replicate the same feeling in your mind, because visualizing such a thing actually puts different chemistry into your body, just like the actors. So in one of the 10 actions that I have in my book is to visualize going to a what I call temple of healing. Now, throughout the world, there have always been places where people went to get healed. In Los Angeles, it was the in California, it was the Palm Springs. And is Sonoma in Arizona, I think?
Sedona. Yes.
Sedona, yeah, that's another place where people have gone there and felt healed. The atmosphere.
Vortexes and things like that in Sedona.
Exactly. So we know that we can use the mind for healing, and in my book I give these exercises that you can do which will make a difference. Now, one of the things that keeps a lot of boomers from really fulfilling their life is that they build up can't and don't. I can't dance, I can't be a public speaker, I can't do math, and so on. You build this up over the years, and by the time you're 50, 55, you're full of these things. And one of the exercises I have is to get rid of can't and don't. Because when you get rid of can't and don't, then you turn to being creative. And when you're creative, again, your body chemistry is so much better. You know,
go ahead. I was just going to say that a negative thought process goes a long way, and it builds up. It just builds up within you. Whatever the term for it is, I just say it builds up, and before you know it, you can't do anything, including get out of a chair.
Exactly. They've done this hundreds of times. Patient says, I can only lift 5 pounds. So they give them this box, and they say, "See, okay, this is 5 pounds. Let's lift it a couple of times." And he lifts it back and forth, and so on and so forth. Well, it turns out it was a 10-pounder. But he didn't know it was a 10-pounder, so therefore he was able to go ahead and lift it. Same thing, I can only walk 5 blocks. Okay, let's walk around this track a little bit, and let's see how you do. So we walk around the track, and turns out they walked 30 blocks, and so on. So if you can get rid of the can't and don't, you can be creative. And being creative is also your means of being young, because if you go to any recreational place where there are seniors and you see the people making clay, you know, pots and so on and so forth, they look younger. Now, the other thing, too, everyone wants to be young and so on and so forth, and, you know, we'll be happy to have you come to your office. We'll do a facelift and so on. But Dr. Ellen Langer of Harvard did an experiment where she took these 70-year-old men and put them in an artificial environment of 10 years previous. Everything was 10 years ago. The radio, the newspapers, the decorations, the food, everything was 10 years before. And by every measurement that you could make, these people were 10 years younger.
So what they... When they see things like 70 is the new 50 or 70 is the new 40, whatever, that's kind of what they're talking about, because maybe these people are living longer, living happier, living more fulfilled, and not paying a lot of attention to the stories of aging.
Well, I mean, when a 70-year-old decides after all this he's going to learn golf, and he starts taking lessons, and, he's not, the greatest golfer in the world, but he enjoys it, and he's happy doing it. He's younger. There's no question about that. And, again, we can do a PET scan on his brain and see that that's happening.
So that's why everybody, not everybody, I should, that's a misnomer. That's why a lot of people suggest that as you get older and you're to keep your brain and your body young and vital, you should do things like trying to maybe play an instrument, maybe learn a new language and so on. That keeps the brain active and keeps the juices flowing, so to speak.
One of the greatest gadgets, as far as I'm concerned, is that Wii game. You know, the one that's it's spelled W-I-I. They have these games that anybody can, dance to, exercise to, and pretend they're playing tennis to at home in front of their TV. I think this is fabulous. And actually, I'm in the process of making a program for people using that game to prevent falls, and that's a really wonderful gadget.
Well, I'm familiar with that. Not that I have it, but my my daughter and son-in-law have it, and they got we've got two granddaughters, 5 and 3, and those girls just love those Wii games. They love games and everything else, and now they're also being used, as I understand it, in assisted living homes.
Oh, absolutely. I think
bowling.
It's just...
Yeah, they're bowling sitting in their chair. They're dancing sitting in their chair. They're doing whatever they're doing if they can't get up and physically walk or whatever with a great deal of difficulty. They are still involved. They're still engaged.
Well, if you examine the program, they specifically do things to take away the don't and can't.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, now lift your left foot. That's great. You did great there. Now lift your right foot. Oh, that's great. You did great there. So there isn't this don't and can't entering your inhibition situation.
Well, you're taking they're taking the negativity out of it. That's for sure, and that's goes a long way. How do things like the endorphins, as an example, how do endorphins and other brain chemicals figure into all of this? What is an endorphin? I think I know, but from the medical standpoint, what is an endorphin?
Well, an endorphin is basically a compound that stops the pain. So. What happens is that he comes into the emergency room. He's got a very bad fracture. He is in pain. And the nurse rushes and gives him a shot. Here's a pain shot for you. And his pain goes away. Well, she didn't have time to get the real pain medicine from the pharmacy. They were having some problem there. So she decided to give him distilled water. But his mind said, hey, this is a pain shot. Release the endorphins. They've done real, very, very scientific studies. Every 4 hours, this patient was given a shot of morphine for real pain. And on the fourth shot, they gave him distilled water. And he had exactly the same reaction that he had with the morphine. His breathing slowed, his blood pressure came down, his pain went away, his face eased up and so on. Now, then they went ahead and they repeated this, but this time they gave a morphine blocker drug when they gave the distilled water, and it didn't work. He still had the pain. So the brain will learn a certain habit. In other words, she knows that the red pill works great for her. So what they do, they put the same ingredients into the white pill, and she insists the white pill doesn't work for her. Now, this happened to me. I was giving this patient one slow-release pill. You take one a day, came out, and every scientific study showed that it works much better. So I told her, we're going to give you this one-a-day pill. And she insisted she wanted the four-day pill, and I insisted that she take the one-a-day pill. And guess what? It didn't work for her. So I can be wrong, too.
But there is definitely a case to be made for mind over matter.
Oh, absolutely. I don't like mind over matter. I think mind to make you well.
Okay.
This is, again, these placebos work. I mean, her wrist was swollen. She couldn't bend her wrist. She was in pain. Previous therapies hadn't helped her. So she enrolled in this experimental study. And sure enough, the pill took the swelling down. Now she can move her wrist, and the pain went away. And then when they uncover the formulas, they find out that she took the placebo. Now, why did that work? Well, her mind did the healing. So we know that the mind can work, can do the healing. The question is, how can you make your mind help you heal? And that's what my book is all about.
Well, we've mentioned the book several times, but we haven't mentioned how to get hold of it yet. How can people find the book? Where can they find it?
Well, again, the book is Stressed Anxiety, Your Cure is in the Mirror. It's on Amazon. There are two versions. There's the Kindle version and the print version. and they're both, you know, equally good.
So the typical way of finding something on Amazon is by the author or by the title.
Exactly.
So title, you could go ahead and,
the author is Maury Grossan, MD. Grossan.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, this hour has gone by very quickly. It's still a little bit of time left, but it's winding down. It's getting down to the short rows, I guess, as they say. This whole thing about teaching your mind different methods to cure or to improve your lifestyle is very intriguing, and there are other people that have suggested hypnosis or post-hypnotic suggestion. How much validity can you or not give or not give to that?
No, hypnosis is good because you get somebody relaxed and you have them visualize these things taking place. But again, if you use all your senses, you know, smell, taste, and so on, to visualize that fun day you had at the beach, you will replicate the same chemistry. And if you visualize whatever it is, not smoking, and use all your senses, taste and so on, you get a similar reaction. So there's nothing wrong with hypnosis. In hypnosis, you can make one hand hot and the other hand cold. But, see, I come from the age of biofeedback where we use sensors to accomplish the same thing. We could put the sensors on the right hand and have the person look at the dial, and they could raise the temperature or lower the temperature. So it's a matter of simply doing the exercises and learning how to do that. Now, I have my gadget for the sinus is called the HydroPulse, and it pulses the cilia back and forth. Well, I have the people visualize that pulse wave actually moving those cilia back and forth, and I'm sure that that has a lot to do with why it's so successful in clearing up the sinus and allergy problems. Also, the irrigation relaxes them, and that also helps the cure. So if you have a doctor who causes you to feel anxious and anxiety, you better get somebody else. That's a really important thing.
That just hits home to me, because there have been doctors that I have gone to over the years, and if I didn't like that doctor, I would go in, and I have high blood pressure, so I've been in its control with medication. But even when it was being controlled with medication, and I take my own blood pressure and everything was fine, I know I'm going to that doctor, and I didn't like that doctor, and that blood pressure went up. And he said, we would joke, look, I came to see you, and look what happens. Well, I guess, Betty, that was really the case, wasn't it? I went to see him, and it went up.
You know, in every group, there's one doctor. He has the same training, the same expertise, and so on and so forth. Yet all his patients get well much faster than the other doctors. And it's because his manner, his warmth, his really trying to help the people registers with the patient, and they feel relaxed with him, and that relaxation is the therapy.
Well, I see these things on the little square or rectangular tube that sits on top of my table. And there's this apparently nationally owned cancer treatment center that they have some in various cities. And their whole thing seems to be the fact that they use all of the modalities. They don't leave any stone unturned. They really care for each individual and so on and so forth. And that sounds exactly like what you're talking about when you're talking about a doctor that has a better outcome because of the way they treat the patient. That used to be called bedside manner.
Well, it still is. I mean, it's still the bedside manner. But one thing, unfortunately, in today's world, you got to be careful of hype.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
oh yeah.
When I see some of these advertisements in Los Angeles, we had this 1-800 Get Thin, and they had all this glowing testimonials and stuff like that. And for me, testimonials, I question very, very strongly. I have the joke, how come in the testimonials these patients all look happy and young and youthful and gay and so wonderfully radiant, but my patients never look like that? I mean, anyway, that's meant as a joke, but it's true. These people that they have in the testimonials look so great.
Well,
I
took a marketing class a long time ago, way back in the day, and they said, you see a person in a white coat on TV talking about a product, and they've got a stethoscope, and somebody says, that's a doctor. And it says, no, it's an actor pretending to be a doctor.
Well, I don't mind them. What I object to are these testimonials where they have the people looking so radiant, and they all have perfect teeth.
Well, what I'll suggest is they are an actor pretending to be a satisfied patient. Maybe the patient really was satisfied, but they didn't look like that, so let's throw the actor in there instead.
Exactly.
Well, Doctor, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Believe me, is there any other information that you'd like to give our listeners with regard to how they can get hold of you? Do you do anything over the phone, internet, anything like that? If you have websites, whatever you have for your information,
Well, my,
please.
My blog is www.grossaninstitute.com. You can go on there and read my daily or weekly musings, new things that I have, one of which is about the people who are up for Oscar nominations who get strokes because they don't have relaxation. And also on my Facebook, again, Grossan Institute Facebook, you can ask questions, and we try to answer them as best we can. That is available. And, of course, my books, the one on sinus, Free Yourself from Sinus and Allergy Problems Permanently, is also on Amazon. So you can, you know, contact me through the Institute, grossaninstitute.com, or through the Facebook, Grossan Institute.
Very good. Well, Doctor, we're going to be coming up with our next issue of our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks, and I may be contacting you and discuss with you the possibility of you contributing an article to that. I think it'd be very very good information to have in our next issue.
I'd be happy to do that.
I will then get a hold of you based on that, and I want to thank you once again for being on the show with me today. And you've made it a very interesting and a very informative hour of discussion. I especially enjoy having medical people on because I always learn something whenever I have a medical person, a doctor on board. So thank you very much for taking the time to be with me today.
My pleasure, and have a great week. Bye now.
Thank you. You do the same. This has been the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. You've been listening to us right here. We're trying to bring you good conversation every day, good conversation to the world. Today we brought you information and conversation with Dr. Murray Grossan, M.D., out of Los Angeles, California. We can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow we'll have another show on. We're going to be talking tomorrow with a gentleman that has written the book Visual Marketing, and all about logos and images and so on, and design and that type of thing for anybody that's involved in the business community that has a business that might be interested in finding out more about that type of information. So remember, we do much more than host this show on Blog Talk. Check us out at BoomerTheBabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Be sure to go to BoomerTheBabe.com. Sign up for our new Experience Speaks online magazine. It's absolutely free. Hope you'll enjoy the content. And be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And we'll see you again tomorrow, everybody. Take care now.
to the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.